Pace with Pacek of BornBurner.ca, our daily podcast entitled Fired Up, and welcome to another edition of the Ground the Pound show here on BornBurner.ca with Steve Carney of WBA Radio in Tampa Bay, Florida. Steve, we're going to look back at UFC Fight Night 121. Fabricio Werdum in the main event got the job done. What did you think of that bout?
Yeah, you know, I looked at the some of the results and some of the statistics that came out of the Werdum-Tibora fight. You look at Werdum, who is not known particularly. I mean, you know, most of these Brazilian guys are known for their takedowns and working from the bottom. Werdum, definitely a much better striker than most of the folks who do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and that really showed in this in the main event in Sydney. You know, 61% of his strikes landed, as opposed to just 50% for Tibora. 58% of significant strikes. They both got a takedown, but Werdum was really, really pushing for the takedown, and when he finally did was able to get him down, it's not surprising to me that two of the three judges scored this five rounds to none for Werdum. And I was kind of surprised that it wasn't 50-45 across the board, that Judge Charlie Keach did give one round to Marcin Tybura.
All right. And this is a weird card, Fight Night 121, as the next three bouts were split decisions. Has there ever been a card where three consecutive bouts were split decisions?
You know, going back and trying to rack my brain as to how many times you've seen cards with just multiple split decisions, not three consecutive bouts that had split decisions. This was really, really a crazy night with Rowdy Beck Rawlings losing in a split decision, with Bilal Muhammad taking a split decision over Tim Means, and Jake Matthews over Bojan Velikovic, all three of them ending up in split decisions. And it was really weird because, especially the Matthews decision, I was definitely surprised just looking at the numbers. You would think that this would have been a unanimous decision for Matthews, and luckily he does get the split decision. But, I mean, while he did not throw as many strikes as his opponent, he landed more. He had almost the same exact amount of significant strikes, though he threw fewer of them. He landed just as many, and he took down his opponent four times, so he did end up in one submission attempt. So I was kind of surprised that was a split decision. The other two I wasn't too surprised with, especially Bilal Muhammad. That matchup just seemed to be sloppy to me. You know, there was just a lot of swinging and missing from both competitors in that one, both Means and Muhammad. And it seemed like they were just swinging for the fences and missing. They looked like Aaron Judge on a typical August day for the New York Yankees. And then, of course, the women's the semi-main event between Rowdy Beck Rawlings and Jessica Rose Clark. I was kind of surprised with that one, mostly because Rawlings, I felt, got outclassed. I thought that her opponent threw more strikes. She landed more strikes and a ton more significant damage. Why was that not a unanimous decision? But all three of them end up as split decisions, and I've been using this time kind of just stalling to see if I can think of a card that had three consecutive split decisions, and none of them come to mind.
All right, and the final bout that I want to touch on about UFC Fight Night 121 happened this weekend. I got to touch on a fellow Canadian, my good friend Elias Theodore, getting by Kelly there. It wasn't a split decision. It was a unanimous decision. And what do you think is next for my buddy Theodore in the middleweight division?
You know, the middleweight division, you find yourself in kind of a log jam with St. Pierre at the top. And then you look at some of the guys underneath him in that in the middleweight division. You know, with Whitaker, who is already going to get the next run at GSP. You still have Michael Bisping. You still have Yoel Romero. You still have Rockhold. You still have Jacare Souza. Former champions like Chris Weidman. You know, for Elias Theodoru, he's not in the top 15 yet. So I would like to see him get a matchup against maybe a Uriah Hall or a Vitor Belfort to try and, I guess, prove that he belongs in the top 15 in the rankings, and then you just move up from there. But it's going to take a win over a top 15 for him to get into the top 15. Uriah Hall, Vitor Belfort, both of them huge names in the division, and I think really could give him a great challenge.
All right. Now, stories in UFC. Cyborg has signed a multi-fight deal with the UFC, and Cyborg will fight Holly Holm on December 30th, the year-end UFC pay-per-view. You think Holly Holm could last with her or even beat her?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think Holly Holm, you're gonna think about it as kind of weird that UFC 219 pay-per-view is where that bout's going to be defended on December 30th. I think Holly Holm is definitely underrated for most people. I think most people think of her as a one-hit wonder, beating Ronda Rousey and then basically falling off the planet. I don't think she belongs at 135 pounds anyway. That's a lot. That's a really heavy weight cut for a woman that is used to working at 145 pounds and maybe even a little heavier. I think in kickboxing, I think she fought at 151 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to, or 153 pounds. I'd have to double check on her fights when she was kickboxing. But I think that 135 pounds is just a little bit too much of a weight cut. She's big enough that at 145 pounds, she works well at that weight, and I think that Chris Cyborg needs the competition, and I don't think there's any better competition than you can have than a former bantamweight champion in Holly Holm.
Okay, another story. We touched on this last time. It looks like Anderson Silva has tested positive for some substance, and Michael Bisping has stated that his second positive test, drug test, has destroyed his legacy. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I agree with Michael Bisping completely. You know, one failed test and you can chalk it up to, okay, maybe it's a simple mistake that was made. But now he is tested positive twice. This one, you know, he's tested positive once in competition, and now the second positive test. The Nevada State Athletic Commission is really going to come down hard on him this time. You know, I think he got away with easy because he's Anderson Silva the first time. That's not going to happen this time. You're going to see a lengthy ban for the fighter this time. And, you know, it's disappointing because he's such an exciting fighter to watch. And now this is probably, if you ask me, this is going to be the end for Anderson Silva, at least in the UFC. Maybe he goes back to Brazil and fights specifically in Brazil. But I have a feeling that the UFC, it's going to be a while before he gets a license again in the state of Nevada, and I don't think the UFC is going to want to wait for him.
All right. Another bout being discussed at UFC 219, and this should be a good fight. According to Tyrone Woodley, he wants to fight Nate Diaz, and his fight is 50% done. If they fight, What do you expect that one? Because it's been a long layoff for Nate Diaz, and Woodley, you know, Woodley is desperate to fight anybody. He wants to fight GSP. He wants to fight Diaz. He wants to fight Conor McGregor. He wants to fight anybody. So he's desperate for a fight. If that fight is done for UFC 219 or sort of 50% done, what do you think of that bout?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if that is actually going to be the next welterweight title fight, because you look at Diaz is known for fighting at 155 pounds. Yes, both he and Conor McGregor did get up to 170 pounds for a fight, which was very strange. But there's so many guys that are right now in the welterweight division that, you know, you could see them as the possible next contender for Woodley to face off against. You know, you have Wonderboy Thompson, who's ranked right behind Woodley in the UFC's rankings, former champ and Robbie Lawler. You've got guys like Rafael Dos Anjos and Damian Maia, who have both fought for the title. And Carlos Condit is also still in the top 10. I'd be really interested to see if Nate Diaz is going to get the chance to skip all of those guys and go right for the title. I think that there's going to be a lot of, I guess you could say, discord and a lot of grumbling if that is indeed the case, because I'm sure that guys like Wonderboy Thompson are definitely going to be angry and wonder why they're not getting the fight with Tyron Woodley, because, you know, Nate Diaz really hasn't done much at 170 pounds since the Conor McGregor fight.
All right. So this or next weekend, November 25th in China, we mentioned this last time, but it bears repeating because we're about 6 days away, 5 days away. Michael Bisping, after, you know, 3 weeks ago fighting GSP and losing, takes on Gaslin. Now, he lost to GSP. He's calling up Anderson Silva. Now he's fighting in 3 weeks later against Gaslin. Could he win this bout? And then he says he wants to retire in March when they have a card in London. So Bisping is all over the map here. What do you think? Of course, he came in. I said he's going to beat GSP, or GSP was going to beat him. I think you and Rory said that maybe Bisping was going to win. But what do you expect this time around?
You know, I look at a guy in Bisping that hasn't had to worry about, you know, getting out of shape and then having to go back into a camp. He's already in fight shape, so I'm not that surprised that he was willing to take the fight on short notice in place of GSP against Kelvin Gastelum. I think that that for a guy like Bisping, he's got a 4-inch reach advantage over Gastelum. I think that his fight against GSP is probably going to both help him and hurt him, because having the recent video, I think that for a guy like Gastelum, he can go back and dissect that fight and find out exactly how he wants to go up against a guy like Bisping. But Bisping being ready for a fight can also quickly change his tactics and really make it, a little difficult for Kelvin Gastelum. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. It's a real big plus to a card that I think was in danger of being canceled with the positive drug test of Anderson Silva. And really, I think that you can chalk it up, and I'm sure that Dana White and the powers that be of the UFC are going to give Michael Bisping a lot of thanks for saving this card, because to me, without Anderson Silva and without this main event, this card is very much in danger of being canceled.
right, finally, as we close out the MMA Ground and Pound show here with Steve Kearney of WDE Radio in Tampa Bay, Florida, Rory Mitchell, AWOL. But let's talk about the next big card, UFC 218, Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. Main event, Featherweight Championship, Holloway against the returning Aldo. This should be, no pun intended, a bomb burner.
Yeah, it should be interesting. With Holloway as the UFC featherweight champion, going up against the former champion Jose Aldo. Holloway has, I think, pretty much proven why he has been the guy that took over for Conor McGregor as the UFC featherweight champion. Aldo, I'm sure, is very anxious to try and get his hands back on his title. But Holloway, I think his speed, and if he's able to keep things keep himself on his feet and keep Aldo from taking him down, yeah, I certainly think that Holloway's got a great chance handing Aldo his fourth loss of his career.
All right, and another on that card, Overeem is on it, Pettis is on it, it's a big card. Joe Louis Arena, maybe it's send Rory to Joe Louis Arena Joe Louis Arena's finished, but Little Caesars Arena, and you always heard good things about Little Caesars Arena, right?
Yeah, I heard that it's hot and ready whenever you want it to be, and this card is really stacked. I think they did a really good job for the first card in a brand new arena in Detroit. Not, as you said, not only do you have the featherweight championship between Max Holloway and Jose Aldo, and you have Alistair Overeem making his return to the octagon, Cejudo and Sergio Pettis, Eddie Alvarez on the card. You're going to see a couple of really good female bouts with Tisha Torres and Michelle Watterson, the karate hottie, going at it at 115 pounds. You're going to see my girl Felice Herrig get back into the octagon to take on Courtney Casey. That's going to be a fantastic fight. And then, of course, Amanda Cooper and Angela Magana at the beginning of that card. Don't sleep on the women. The 115-pound strawweight division is going to be represented, and it's going to be represented big time at UFC 218 in Detroit.
Sorry, it's Little Caesars Arena. I should just call it the pizza. Steve Kearney, WDE Radio in Tampa Bay, Florida. Tell everybody how they could get a hold of you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Steve Kearney, SteveCarney. I know it's real original. And you can hear me weekdays from 3 to 6 on 620 WDAE in Tampa with my friend Steve Dumick. If you're not in the Tampa Bay region, you can always listen live on the iHeartRadio app, and you can also listen on demand on iHeartRadio as well.
And Steve, on behalf of myself and everybody here at Barnburner, I'd like to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving this week. Going to eat good turkey or what?
Gobble gobble, my friend. I've got a full plate waiting for me on Thursday.
All right. This has been another edition of the Ground and Pound Show here on Barnburner.ca with Steve Kearney of WDE Radio in Tampa Bay, Florida. Thanks a lot, Steve.
You got it, Joe. Thanks, man.